Excuse the news. This is a McGill Daily and CKUT collaboration.
We're joined by three guests, all of whom are part of environmental groups on campus. We have Celine Jessa, a member of Educational Community and Living Environment, and Evan Berry, who is a volunteer for Organic Campus. And we also have Victor Frankel from Divest McGill. Thank you all for being here.
Thanks for having us.
So Celine, let's start with you.
Sure.
You're a member of ECOL. What does that mean? And what does your group do?
Sure. So ECOL is the Educational Community Living Environment, and ECOL is a student-run sustainability hub on campus. We have a house at 3559 University Street, and we sort of have three main goals. The first is living. So there are eight upper-year McGill students living in the house, trying to figure out what it means to live sustainably in an urban environment that is Montreal. And then we're also interested in learning, and so we're all doing some sort of applied research project on sustainability. And then the last pillar is community. And so we facilitate our house as an open space for sustainability-related groups on campus to use for, like, events and discussions and meetings and film screenings to sort of be an informal hub for sustainability at McGill.
Wonderful. And can you just explain a bit more about the events that ECOL hosts?
Yeah, absolutely. So ECOL is just beginning to kick off its programming. One of the things we're really excited about is the launch of Cinema ECOL, which is a sustainability film screening and discussion series. That begins next week, next Thursday, with a screening of Disruption, which is a film about climate change. In terms of other events, we had a launch party at the beginning of the year. We host communal dinners, and we also really get excited about partnering with other sustainability groups on campus to run, like, talks and lectures and other such events.
Great. And what would you say would be the main goal of ECOL?
I think the main goal of ECOL would be to use sustainability as a way to connect McGill students, McGill staff and faculty, and the Milton Park community. I think that connection between all those groups is something that's lacking, and we like sustainability as a way to do that.
Wonderful, thanks. And Victor, you are a member of Divest McGill. So for those who don't know, can you explain what Divest McGill is?
Yeah, absolutely. Divest McGill is a group of undergraduate and graduate students with the goal of divesting McGill's endowment of $1.2 billion away from fossil fuel companies, as well as tar sands companies and oil pipeline companies. It's a very focused group of students in that they have a very clear goal, which is to remove the McGill's endowment, its funding from fossil fuel companies that have been demonstrated to have negative social impacts on local communities as well as the environment.
And what has Divest McGill been up to recently?
Yeah, absolutely. So let me address that question. So let me just step back a little bit and tell you what we've done, because it gives context to what we're doing now. So 2 years ago, Divest McGill became an organization of students. It was one of the first divestment campaigns in all of North America and actually the world. And now there's over 600 universities, cities, and other companies that are also working on divesting from fossil fuels. In order to have an audience with the Board of Governors, their committee, the CAMSAR, the Committee on Reviewing the Ethical Implications of McGill's Endowment, well, of the investments where the McGill's Endowment is invested, they request that students have a petition that's signed by a bunch of people. So we filled out their petitions and were able to gain an audience with CAMSAR. The result of the meetings that we had with CAMSAR was essentially they decided that we did not meet, we did not provide really convincing proof that fossil fuel companies have negative social injury. Same conversation that we had with the principal also reiterated the same point. Now, when we essentially went through the motions that they requested of us, we were met essentially with a stone wall from the administration. Now what we're doing is trying to collaborate with other divestment groups and other universities around Quebec. Just this weekend, for example, we're going to have a convergence of divestment groups and sustainability focus groups, not just in Quebec, not just in Canada, but also in the United States, where we're going to get together and really focus on how to build stronger coalitions so that we have stronger results this time around. In addition, we're also sending out across departments an open letter to faculty so that the faculty can also be involved in the conversation. As many faculty recognize that climate change is real, that it's caused by human activities, and that it does not only have significant social harm, but also very important implications for the welfare of our species and of life on the planet.
Absolutely. So going back to McGill, as you know, a motion has recently been passed by the SMU Fall General Assembly for SMU to take action on climate change. Can you explain what kind of actions SMU is planning on taking and your thoughts on them?
Yeah, the recent General Assembly, they voted to approve that the SSMU would be part of a coalition called ECO of different student groups throughout Quebec and other sustainability groups that are essentially working as a united front to work towards sustainability issues. The most important priority for this group is to address the Energy East oil pipeline. So it's a united front of student organizations and citizens groups throughout Canada that are working together for a common goal. So not only just divesting our own universities, but actually working together towards regional and national policy.
And so what are your thoughts towards people who have to argue that if McGill divests from fossil fuels, it will be put in an economically unstable position, or that McGill will be portrayed as quote-unquote anti-business?
Well, I think that's a very important question, and that's part of the conversation that we're having with faculty and with the Board of Governors. Recently, the prices of oil have dropped significantly, and what the consequences of that is that universities and businesses and governments that are invested in fossil fuels have really been hit very hard by this decrease in oil prices. So the economic argument that can be made is that you are hurting McGill's endowment by getting it out of a very stable business. However, investments in fossil fuels have actually proven to be very volatile because of the upswings and downswings of energy prices that are being put in place by regional governments, regional companies as well. Essentially, they're making an illogical argument that fossil fuel investments are stable. We're actually making the argument that it is not. And so as a good example of this is that in response to SSMU's divestment from fossil fuel companies, their return investments actually were higher than they were when they were invested in fossil fuels. Right now, other universities that are much more heavily invested in fossil fuels than McGill have been hit very, very hard by the decrease in oil prices, as well as the government of Canada. So we believe that the argument that is perpetuated by fossil fuel companies in supporting that their investments in their companies are very secure, it's actually proven the opposite because of the volatility of those markets.
Frankly, do you think that the university will listen to this push from students?
I think they have to. I think that the Board of Governors, the conversations that we've had with the principal of the university, with the Board of Governors, it is very clear that they care very much about student learning, about the welfare of the university, and ultimately are very much concerned about the financial stability of the university. However, we believe that the investments of the university into fossil fuel companies are, in the long term, not secure investments, don't actually support McGill's long-term vision of education and of building strong leadership within the student communities. So we think that they have to listen to us. I think that an important product of last year's campaign and the conversations that we had with CAMPSAR, the Board of Governors Committee on Ethical and Social Responsibility, a big win that we had was that they now have to do an annual review of the ethical ramifications of their investments. In addition, they have included significant environmental harm as part of their bylaws of one of the components of what they have to consider in the responsibility of the companies that they're investing in. So we think that the, no pun intended, or sorry about the pun, but the climate is actually changing within the administration that is a lot more, it's a lot more positive to what we're trying to do at this point, receptive to what we're trying to do at this point.
And now, Evan, our third guest, who is a member of Organic Campus. Can you tell us what Organic Campus is?
Of course. Organic Campus is a student-driven organization located in the SMU building right when you enter on the right. And we sell a whole bunch of organic goods, and they're supplied to us by a local farmer. He's located near the Ontario-Quebec border. And all the food that he cultivates is organically grown, and he also does a bunch of baking with his family. So one of the really awesome things we have are we have the Ethiopian influence of his family. So we have some awesome injera wraps for sale. We also have some really good flatbreads and some vegetable fritters. So yes, it's really good to eat, but it's also good because you get to support organic agriculture and also local farmers as well. So yeah, students can come by, eat some of our awesome sweet potato cinnamon bread. And it's a good way to be engaged in sustainability in a way that, you know, small footprints or small steps at a time, rather. Sustainability is a really all-encompassing thing and can take many, many forms. And even deciding to buy a loaf of bread that is from organic products instead of inorganic fertilizer-driven agricultural systems, being able to make small decisions like that are really big when we can get collective action.
And you'll definitely see me being lining up for that Ethiopian food.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. Evan, can you explain what kind of work Organic Campus does in terms of outreach and education?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think visibility on campus is a big thing. One of the things we recently did was we started having a booth at the McGill Farmers Market. So that was every Thursday. It stopped, I think, a week or two ago, which is unfortunate. But showing that we're incorporated in the regional movement of agriculture and showing that, you know, students can be involved in it as well. So people can stop by. Of course, there's the samples, which always ropes people into trying food, but also gets the dialogue going about what is sustainable eating, what are ways that we can change our current systems to better support the environment. And I think food is the best way to do it because everyone has to eat at some point, and eating good food is a really good way to rope people into that discussion.
One of the best parts of life, of course. And so student lifestyle comes with a lack of time and, of course, a lack of money, to say the least. And many find that living a completely organic lifestyle isn't feasible. What do you have to say to that?
I think it's really difficult nowadays with the word organic itself. I think it's been trendified in a way that makes it very inaccessible to a lot of people. I think for me, when I think organic, I think of Whole Foods. I think of you can only be organic if you're holding your Starbucks in one hand and your iPad in another, which is totally messed up. Sustainability should be a thing that's accessible to everyone regardless of socioeconomic group. And I think having initiatives like this to have reduced price food available to students to show that, you know, you can eat sustainably. Of course, I think our prices are much lower than you would at one of those yuppie stores. And it also, I haven't actually compared the prices myself, but comparing that to like inorganically grown food, I think we provided a much lower price than you would find in other stores. And the buzz around the word organic, we envision health benefits. We envision like an image of a person who eats organically, when in reality, the main reason why you should be eating organic is because the way that organic farming happens is you're not putting less inorganic fertilizer into the soil. You're using organic matter in the soil as well to increase the water-holding capacity of the soil and keeping nutrients in the soil as well, preventing runoff. And one of the big issues with runoff is nitrogen depletion in soils. And once that gets leached out of the soil and into our waterways, we run into issues like eutrophication, which prevents aquatic life from thriving in our waterways. We run into issues with climate change as well, because nitrogen release used from inorganic fertilizers is a greenhouse gas emission. And also we have groundwater contamination as well. So when you see those issues, that can be prevented through measures like organic agriculture being supported. Sustainability becomes a thing that's more of a long-term support for our ecosystems and for what we can do as a human race, instead of just something that you can kind of use as a buzzword while you have your yoga mat and iPad.
And so this is a question that goes out to all three of you, or whomever wants to take it. Why do you think it's important for students, specifically McGill students, to get involved with environmental groups?
I think that's a very important question, and it's a necessary question, because there's so many things that students can be doing and that are required to do as part of their education. But I think that being in university, being involved in these organizations, is part of the education that we are receiving at McGill and part of the education that we are also a part of. We learn from each other as well as we teach each other. And we help to collaborate with each other, and we build relationships with each other. And essentially, it's the opportunity for us to integrate what we're learning in the classroom and really apply it to the real world, bringing that theory to the application to making this world a better place. And I think what's really remarkable is the diversity. Just in this conversation, it's really highlighting the diversity of direct actions and organizations and mobilization efforts that students are involved with in collaboration with faculty as well as citizens groups in Montreal, around Canada, and actually around the world. So I think that the involvement of students in local and global organizations is a necessary part of a complete education and part of the human experience.
Yeah, sure. If I can tag on to this question, I think to go off what Victor just spoke about, one of ECOL's big beliefs is living is learning and learning is living, and that there should be less of a separation in that and between those two things. And so sustainability organizing and being involved in efforts to promote sustainability on campus and within the McGill student body is part of taking our values of sustainability and the things we care about in terms of social and environmental sustainability, and being able to work on those and really really having the chance to understand what those means in our daily lifestyle. And that's one of the big things we're learning with what they call. And then the other thing I guess I would say is that, as we heard from Victor when he was talking about Divest McGill's efforts over the last couple years, students have huge power within the university, but also in society as a whole. And I think when we increase the diversity of the people who are involved in the sustainability movement, and we increase the number of ways we feel it impacts us, the administration and the vision of McGill does depend in part on what students want and where we see our education going. And so I think that contributing to that power is a big reason students should get involved.
I think involvement in these groups, like Victor said, is really important because of education. By joining these groups, you gain a whole wealth of knowledge about these issues, but also through this mobilization, you're also normalizing sustainability and making something that's more accessible to other people. I think often with sustainability, we think of these laws that need to be passed and these massive decisions that need to be brought into our hands, which are extremely important nonetheless. But we also need to think about the things that we can do on a day-to-day life that can contribute to sustainability movements. And by getting involved in these groups, you can get more knowledge about you know, why are you buying that pair of jeans? Do you understand the human rights and that social sustainability behind it? Do you understand the dyes going into waterways overseas that are, you know, depriving people of healthy ecosystems, but also poor health? It's all about education and showing how one little thing that you choose to do, if everyone else contributes to that system, can really make an impact. And it's something that really needs to, sustainability needs to be a grassroots movement. It needs to start with people spreading that information so that people can make those small changes to make sure that we're not kicked off this earth because of environmental decay that we've caused ourselves.
Great. And so another question that I just wanted to throw out to the three of you is, Canada is a huge, powerful country, but we are constantly falling behind our peers, other industrialized countries, when it comes to fighting climate change. Why do you think there hasn't been more public outrage?
If I could maybe try answering that question, I think there's, you know, two ways to look at any country. The first is by what it's doing on an international level, what its leaders are doing. But the second is, what is its civil society doing? And so I think that maybe Canada is certainly not being the greatest leader in terms of environmental sustainability, in terms of our country's practices on in various sectors on the world stage. But I would also say that Canada has probably one of the most grassroots and growing and beautiful and diverse movements from civil society for sustainability around the world. And so I think there is public outrage about that. And I think that on top of that public outrage, any movement has to have an element of outrage, but also an element of rebuilding. And so I think that maybe when we feel our outrage about what Canada is not doing on the world stage, we kind of channel that energy towards building these movements. And I think that movement building is happening all around us, as we can tell from this panel, but even in just the various movements we've seen over the last couple years.
For me, I think this isn't just relevant to Canada, it's to any world power. I think it's a lack of foresight. I think we see that we have all these natural resources available to us and we say, we need to make money now. We need to take advantage of our oil reserves. Like, let's build this pipeline, let's drill here, let's frack here. And I find that frustrating because we don't invest in economies that are really sustainable themselves. And I feel like all of these problems that we're having with the inaction of our governments can be solved immediately if we invest in non-band-aid strategies and sustainable industries themselves. I think governments need to have more incentive to invest in those industries, renewable energies, composting, recycling facilities, because they're not looking far enough ahead into the future, and there are too many interests immediately in fossil fuels, and it's profitable. And yeah, it's because we have the money for it now, but we won't have the money now. We won't have the money in the future. And it's just a matter of thinking ahead and caring about our children, as trite as that sounds. It's really, really true.
Victor, anything that you'd like to add?
That question is very difficult. I think in recent events, let me just start with a very good example, the lack of leadership demonstrated by Prime Minister Harper when leaders of the world met. They met in September at the United Nations Climate Change Summit. It was the largest meeting of heads of state in world's history in any summit to address climate change. Harper was in New York that day, but he did not attend the summit. It sent a very clear signal to the international community that leadership is not present in Canada. And I believe that there is outrage. But I also believe that there's a lot of money and political investments in fossil fuel industries. I think that the investments within the social society as well as the political organizations, I think that they are very much invested in the fossil fuels that Canada is very rich in. And it's one of the richest countries in terms of non-renewable resources. So as long as money is tied into that, it's very difficult for anybody to work against that, because money talks very loudly. So I believe that there is outrage within the civil society in Canada, but what is necessary is for people to not only engage within their local communities to make their own livelihoods and their own ways of lives more sustainable, but to actually apply a consensus movement within student organizations, within civil society, concerned citizens groups, to really unite as a united front in order to meet the challenges that are posed by a resistance to a real ambitious climate change policy that hopefully will be ratified in Paris 2015. So I believe that the challenges are there, but I think that there is a very strong and growing social movement to address this very issue.
I also want to point out that there are other governments who have done a really good job about natural resource management. If you look at Norway, for instance, they had offshore drilling sites where they made so much money, and they realized that it wasn't a sustainable thing. They stopped their offshore drilling. They put their money in a foreign bank account, and they're collecting the interest from that money to provide generational support for their posterity.
Yep, they're putting it into a federal savings fund.
Yeah, yep. They're badasses. They're great. It's true that we have these natural resources, but we don't have to fully rely on them. And I think Norway's a great example. Of course, they use those resources in the first place, but they understand that it's not a sustainable resource. And the amount of it they have is finite. And I don't know. When I learned about that, it gave me hope that world powers can, despite their resources, not fall into that resource curse and do something more productive with what they don't have yet. I think Canada can follow suit. I think we can't fall into this idea that we have to exploit everything we have. And, I don't know, take a page out of Norway's book. They're awesome.
Great. So, Céline, are there any upcoming events for École, and how can people get involved or look out for them?
Yeah, absolutely. So, in terms of events, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, Cinéma École, our sustainability film and discussion series, is launching next Thursday at 7:30 at the École House, which is 3559 University Street, just north of Milton and University. We also meet every week on Thursdays at 5:30, also at the House. Those are our collected meetings, and that is the best way to get involved. One of the amazing things about École is that because we have a physical space and so much is going on in the House all the time, there are tons and tons of hands-on ways to get involved in École, in making our programming happen, in the logistics of the House, and helping us find for funding for next year, and trying to help us figure out what it means to live sustainably. So Thursdays are a big day for École. In terms of staying updated, we have a website at écoleproject.wordpress.com, and we're on Facebook. We post there very often. But yeah, we love to see folks at our collective meetings on Thursdays.
Great. And Evan, once more, where can we find the Organic Campus Stand, and where can people go to learn more about it?
Mm-hmm. So we're on the web, so find our Facebook page. We're there posting updates and everything. But if you want to stop by, we're on the first floor of the SMU building right as you walk in. We're on the right. We have our little stand there. We're open Tuesday through Thursday, 12 to 5. And yeah, we'd love to see you there.
Great. And Victor, how can we find out more about Divest McGill? And for people who are interested in getting involved, where can they go?
Yeah, so Divest McGill, you can find resources on the web as well. We also have a Facebook page. We have Twitter. We're on social media. So you can find out about current events, local campaigns that are happening on these websites. We also meet every other Tuesday at École on University Avenue. So you can find us there at 7 o'clock every other Tuesday. And the campaigns that we're working on, to reiterate, we're working on addressing the CAMSARS, the Board of Governors Committee's arguments that we need to really prove and really make a stronger argument that investments in fossil fuel companies have negative social and environmental harm. We're also working on the McGill faculty open letter in support of the divestment program, as well as we're having a convergence this weekend Friday, tomorrow, the keynote speakers will be at presenting at 7 o'clock at Concordia University. And on Saturday, we'll have workshops and other convergence activities with 350.org and other divestment campaigns throughout the United States and Canada at the SSMU on Saturday. But please look us up on Facebook and find out more on how to get involved in this very dynamic and very productive campaign.
Great. So we'll be posting all of this information about the three groups on our website, mcgilldaily.com/podcast. I'd like to say a big thanks again to our three guests, Celine, Victor, and Evan. Thank you for your diverse opinions and discussion today.
Thank you for having us. It's been a pleasure.